So, hi everyone, welcome to Talking Science, the best and currently only avant-garde science program on Campus Radio Linz. And I'm Boyang, a human being with feelings who deserves all of your respect despite of having no plan or clue what he's going to do or say for the next half an hour, which I guess makes the show more interesting because it gets exciting. There's no telling what's going to happen. Also, most of it will be audio. So Talking Science, Talking Science is about the epic quest of one man, me, to fill 30 minutes or less of broadcasting with stuff that can be loosely defined as science. And today I rather wish I could cancel the show again due to lack of any relevant content. I mean, stress is eating me up. I haven't slept more than 3 hours for the last 2 weeks. I mean, I'm losing or gaining weight, I don't know. I mean, I haven't stepped onto a scale since 2003. I'm having a panic attack every morning. I've been smoking so much lately that I've switched to smoking pipe for continuous nicotine supply. And I haven't seen my children for more than 25 years. Of course, the lack of any offspring may be a partial explanation, but stress is a real relationship killer. And I'm running out of excuses. I mean, there's only so much alcohol that I can drink before the word excessiveness loses its meaning. And there are times where a man or woman or any person of indefinite gender has to face the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune to take up arms or, metaphorically speaking, barehandedly make up something, anything, and may it be silence. Or I could just read the Bible or a telephone book. I mean, it's very hard to judge which of these two is more interesting. I don't have a telephone book with me now, and I don't know how much the Bible contributes to your science education. I could also talk about some online resources that I regularly use. One that is amazing, it's a blog that hasn't been updated for a while, but it's called Science and Math Defeated. And according to Rational Wiki, which is the number one rational wiki, judged by the fact that it comes up as the first result if you look up the word Rational Wiki on Google, based on that, it is Science and Math Defeated is one of the most idiotic blogs on the internet. It is run and contributed to by an individual known as Noted Scholar, which is unusual as he's both hardly notable and barely scholarly. End of the review. I guess the first sentence, one of the most idiotic blog on the internet, gives us quite a strong evidence who is behind the pseudonym Noted Scholar. Seems obvious to me, it's someone studying at our noted university. I'm not going to mention any names, but you know who I'm talking about. Yes, so that was the online resources that I find interesting. I don't know how litigious that noted scholar is, but I can quote some of his blog. For example, oh, that's interesting. I guess this time it's the mathematics that's been defeated. So the title of the blog blog is 0.9999 etc. is equal to 1. And I quote, this is an essential assumption of Bayes' calculus, and if you doubt that it's blah blah blah, actually he makes up some sentences that is sound English, and here we go. So in the end, what he says is, notice that all I needed to disprove this foundation of calculus was mathematical induction. Yes. And his point apparently is that 0.9 period is not equal to 1, I guess. And that calculus is false. And that a house built on sand cannot divide itself. I repeat, a house built on sand cannot divide itself. And therefore, calculus is false. Well, I mean, if a light hasn't gone up for you, then you probably do not understand the depth of his learning. Another very fun blog post is Probability Part 1. Conclusion, I guess, is probability is false. And if you are perfect, then you will abandon all probabilities between 0 and 100%. Yes. I mean, these are kinds of pearls of wisdom that makes you speechless. So yeah, that's what I do when I'm online. Most of the time, and there are other times where I look up other things. Yes. So what else? Well, I've just done 8 minutes with nothing. I mean, that's quite a good progress. You see, the idea behind the show is that I would write my own script based on papers I read. But I must say that is extremely time consuming. I mean, it takes me hours or even days depending on my efficiency. And I'm very inefficient, which means that I might spend a whole week writing a 20-minute script for a show with, on average, 0 listener. Well, on average, more than 0 listener, to be mathematically correct. That, you know, I don't know. It feels like it might not really be, you know, worth it. So I thought I will just wing it. I will just do the show ad lib. And what I do is, I have my paper, which is I promised you 2 weeks ago that I will continue to talk about the Denisovans and about the conclusions from the analysis of the nuclear DNA and other factoids that I can find online about them. So what I do is, I will read the paper aloud, and I will read it at you and make sure you understand by translating it in a language you are familiar with, badly pronounced English. So let's start. Last week I mentioned a paper by Viola and Pebo from year 2013, so from last year, titled What's New in Central Asia, which is a part of a Festschrift for the birthday of Anatoly Derevyanko, who was the director of the Institute of Archaeology and Ethnography at the Russian Academy of Sciences in Novosibirsk. which is in Siberia, to the north of the Denisovan Cave. So in that, the authors write that the Denisova Cave preserves a very long cultural and geological sequence that covers a large part of the late Pleistocene. The Pleistocene is a period that covers the last 2.5 million years up to, I don't know, up to 10,000 years ago. And it's formed from two Greek words, Pleistos, which means Pleistos, which means most, and Kainos, which means new. So Pleistokainos or Pleistocene means most new. I'm pretty sure that is not correct, ancient Greek or modern Greek, but that's how scientists form new words. I guess based on the assumption that to make it more international, I mean, there was a time before us, hardly to imagine, where English wasn't the international language of science. It was Latin and also partially, or ancient Greek. So Latin was more the humanistic language, and ancient Greek was more widely used in science, so in biology, anatomy, etc. And if the scientist, they published mostly in Latin, and if they want to make up a new term, then they would obviously use Latin or Greek so that it can be more understood by more people and by the international science community. But to some degree, it takes, and I guess the tradition still exists, but it takes some very weird forms. So the most new epoch, the Pleistocene, which is the geological term, the archaeological era that to some degree overlaps is the Stone Age. The Old Stone Age and the Middle Stone Age. And in the Middle East, even of the new Stone Age. Of course, the period before that, before Pleistocene, was the Pleistocene, which is also Greek for more, new, or newer. And I don't know, I don't think that is how comparatives are formed in ancient Greek. But again, I don't know. And the newest period, the one that I guess we currently live in, is the Holocene, which means entirely new. Yes. Again, so late Pleistocene is a part of that age, that of that epoch that is closest to us, so about 30 to 50,000 years ago. So Denisova Cave preserves some archaeological remains that is from about 30 to, I don't know, 50, 60,000 years ago. When archaeologists, when they dig, then they do that in layers. They do that very professionally, I guess. So you have layer 1, layer 2, layer 3, and the higher the number goes up, the older it is. So the deeper it is, and the older remain is from. And for example, the layer 22 to 12 contain a so-called mid-Paleolithic industrial. I have no idea what industry means in that context. Paleolithics are from the Old Stone Age. And layer 11, that is what is of great interest to us, is one of the fewer initial upper Paleolithic, Upper Paleolithic assemblage in the region. And there are many, many terminologies that is not of great interest to us. What is interesting is the hominid remains from layer 11. Apparently, they are the most numerous ones from that layer, and a fragment of a distal phalanx, which is the pinky finger. No, which is the upper part of the finger of a child, based on the size, I guess. It is not morphologically diagnostic, meaning that it is very hard to judge by the form of it what it is, but it preserves a large amounts of DNA, and that is what allowed the study of the mitochondrial DNA by Krause et al. From 2010. I talked about it last 2 weeks ago, but also of the nuclear DNA, which is what I will talk about then once I finished interpreting this paper to you. So the most recent generation. Okay, that sentence didn't make any sense. So this remains, I mean, there are different things that they discovered, but this finger of the child is the first evidence for the existence of an unknown group of hominids, and they are called Denisovans, in analogy to the Neanderthals, who were first described in the Neanderthal in Germany. And yes, the analysis of the nuclear DNA showed that the Denisovans interbred with the ancestors of present-day Melanesians, so from Oceania, from the islands close to Australia, resulting in a Denisovan contribution of about 3-6% in recent Papuans and Australian aborigines. The geographic distribution of the Denisovan ancestry has been used to argue that Denisovans, so based on the fact that we have discovered parts of the segments in modern humans, that they also were present in Southeast Asia. And possibly in Tibet, there's a very interesting paper that I will probably talk about sometime about the existence of a gene in Tibetans which enable them to live in the high altitude. And this gene, or this allele, this variant of the gene, is probably inherited from the Denisovans. It is not really known whether these hominins are hominins are individuals that are probably not modern humans, but so close that we don't call them humans, but we call them hominins, despite the fact, or not despite, but it's very likely we don't have any taxonomic classification. It's very possible there are subspecies, meaning that they're just a subpopulation of modern humans that we can fully interpret with them, or that they are separate species, however, that we can somehow interpret with partially, so in a restricted sense. Now, we don't really know. There's no Neanderthals currently alive, or Denisovans, that we can test that, unfortunately. And of course, we don't really have any, since we only have remains from the Altai Mountains, from the Denisova cave, we don't really have any temporal clue how those hominins spread. So were they both present in the Altai and in Southeast Asia, or did they spread from the Altai to Southeast Asia? It's all possible. Of course, this finger part, this distal phalanx, was not the only part, not only hominin or human remains found in that layer. There was also a toe bone that was found in the same layer, so from approximately the same time period, but it was not a Denisovan. Based on its mitochondrial and nuclear analysis, it is more likely to be a Neanderthal, which gives a very interesting conclusion, meaning that at the same time or very close after each other, that both Neanderthals and Denisovans, as well as later modern humans, the remains of which have been found around in that region, they all have been occupying the same space at the same time. There have been two other fossils from the Denisova cave that allow the study of the two fossils found were two molars, and they allow us to study the dental morphology of the Denisovans. As I've said, mentioned last in the last show, that before there was there was DNA sequencing, and I'm going to talk about, I will probably talk about how DNA sequencing works in that specific task. But before there was DNA, people used to study fossils solely based on its morphology and try to classify them and categorize them and taxonomize them based on their forms, which is very hard, and based on a very small sample, at least to me, it seems to be very, I don't know, I think it requires certain creativity to find similarities and to make very sound scientific conclusions based on them. But again, I'm not an archaeologist, and I won't meddle in affairs I have no understanding. So they found two upper molars. Again, I have no idea how they know it is from the upper. It's one of the upper teeth. So it a very large upper molar from that layer, from layer 11.1. Apparently, there are even sub layers within a layer in the south gallery. You know, I guess I think archaeologists are very, they are very down to earth people. I mean, apparently, when they go into a cave, instead of seeing all the dark and wet and whatever is in a cave, what they see is a gallery, you know, a place that might be shiny, might be habitable, such a lovely place to settle in and maybe, you know, interbreed with other hominins and found a family and leave some remains like a fingertoe or a two-toe, or a cup of tooth, I don't know, for the later generations to find. So in the south gallery, you know, part of the cave, they found this molar, and unlike the morphology seen in Neanderthals, it has very robust splaying roots and a bulging crown, and to any dentist, I guess I don't have to explain to you what that means, because I have no idea what that means. And apparently this kind of molar or tooth is more comparable to a mid Pleistocene homo. To some individual of the homo genus. And this tooth carries a mitochondrial DNA lineage that is closely related to the child finger tooth that we have talked about just slightly earlier. And another large tooth fragment has been found in a 2010 excavation. So that was between the layer 11 and layer 12. And it has been sequenced, the DNA has been sequenced and found that it is a Denisovan. So that is what we have so far. A finger bone, and two teeth. So the only thing on which we base a new hominin species on. Hi. By the way, and apparently it is a very large and anomalous upper M3. I guess very large and anomalous for a modern human. It has it is low crowned with 5 cusps. I'm not sure, but apparently modern humans have only 3 or 4 cups for molar. I don't know. And both teeth are far outside the size range seen in Neanderthals, in Homo erectus, or even in later Pleistocene hominids. And then the paper goes on talking about other caves and about the molecular preservation in Denisovan cave, which is very interesting because it has because the amount of DNA found in the finger bone was very high, and secondly the percentage of endogenous, so of Denisovan DNA, was between 60% and 70%, the rest being bacterial DNA, so contaminations that later happened after the child was dead. And that is apparently very, very unusual, because normally from that period, the remains that are studied has, they often have less than 1% of DNA. I mean, sorry, they have less than 1% of endogenous DNA. And so the vast majority is just waste made up from microbes that have been colonizing the bone after its deposition. So that is quite miraculous, and it might be due to the permafrost, the Altai Mountains, the Denisova cave is in the Siberia, and apparently the average temperature there is about zero Celsius, and it is still a mystery why the DNA preservation is so good. But thank God it is there, which helps us to have a very high coverage nuclear sequence of the specimen. That helps us. By the way, I guess before I make any overtime, I might want to introduce my colleague Betty, who is going to moderate her show, host her show after me. Saffron makes the cake yellow. So much better than me. Thank you for having tolerated 30 minutes of me talking, winging a show on a topic I have very little idea of. And now you can relax and enjoy some very good music. So